Welcome. You are locked on the NBA. My name is Nick Angstead. I am a writer at Mavs Moneyball. I am also the host of Locked On Mavericks. And joining me is Adam Friedman from the Locked On Pacers. Adam, how are you?
Pretty good. Happy to be on Locked On NBA.
I am too. It's been awesome to be asked to be on here. Thank you for David Locke and everybody. You get to hear some new voices. So again, I'm Nick Angstead. You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Van Exit. Adam, where can they follow you?
At Friedman Adam 5. I heard the Locked On Celtics guy were on yesterday, right?
I think at least one of them, at least John Corrales was on yesterday. Yeah. And they gave me some extra baseball or some free baseball.
basketball. It means we have a high bar to reach for those guys.
That's true.
Those guys are the pristine of the Locked On NBA channels. Those guys, Celtics guys.
Today, what we're bringing for you is we're gonna have some DeMar DeRozan talk. So he obviously gets traded to San Antonio, but then there's this whole like backlash from him almost that happened almost immediately. There's the Instagram story where he posted he was upset, and then he went on ESPN and he was talking all about how he didn't feel like he was treated right. So we're gonna have this kind of conversation about that, about loyalty. Me coming from Locked On Mavericks, obviously I have a very different perspective on loyalty because of Dirk Nowitzki and everything he's meant to this franchise. And then Adam coming from Locked On Pacers, he has this whole perspective of Paul George and what he did with the Pacers and all that kind of stuff. So I think that'll be a good conversation. And then we're going to finish it up talking about the five teams we think improved the most this offseason. For me, that can either be a players that they've added, or even internally, teams can get better and, players can get better. So we'll do five teams each. Some of them will probably overlap. But we'll talk about that. We're excited. DeMar DeRozan. He gets traded. He did not want to be traded from Toronto. Finally, a player that wants to be in Toronto. They had Vince Carter, who was their first superstar that wanted out, kind of quit on the team. And now they have this, star, maybe not superstar in DeRozan, but he wants to stay there. He gets traded. And then he posts on Instagram, this Instagram story. He said, and I quote, "Be told one thing and the outcome another. Can't trust him. Ain't no loyalty in this game. Sell you out quick for a little bit of nothing." And then he said, "Soon you'll understand." And then it was like a bye emoji. And so he's obviously upset. The little bit of nothing I thought was just like, that's as brutal and as savage as you can get. The little bit of nothing. What did you think about his Instagram story first? And then we'll talk about the ESPN comments.
So my first thought when he got traded was honestly, it was his fault he got traded almost. The team was so bad last year in the playoffs that this was inevitable, basically. I mean, I understand that they probably tried to trade him in June around the draft, and then they probably couldn't find a good trade. And so when this one opened up, it made sense. I was just kind of like, if you guys had won two or three games from the Cavs, then you maybe wouldn't be in the situation. But you guys got smoked in the playoffs. Rosen was not good in game four. So, as much as he talks about loyalty, I mean, it's sort of a little bit his fault that he got traded for Kawhi because he just wasn't able to put up a good enough fight in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing to me. And this will bring us to the ESPN comments. He said, "I felt like I wasn't treated with what I sacrificed for 9 years with the respect that I thought I deserved. By just giving me the say-so of letting me know something's going on, it's a chance of a trade. That's all I wanted. I'm not saying you don't have to trade me. Just let me know something's going on because I sacrificed everything. Just let me know. You know what I mean? That's all I ask." And so like the idea that, to just let him know, this seems like a huge problem in the NBA. We always see teams, trade guys and they don't tell, or we have the whole Russell Westbrook and KD whole story where, KD didn't tell Westbrook that he was leaving and all this stuff. It seems like communication in the NBA needs to, I think the reporters are better than the, teams can internally talk. But then the whole idea of DeMar DeRozan, they didn't have a chance and he just wanted to, stay with the team and they were going to get better. And I don't know where that was, because this is their record in the playoffs the last 5 years. They lost in seven games in the first round in 2014. They're swept in the first round in 2015. They lost 4-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals in 16. But that, we all know that was kind of a, it could have been a sweep. LeBron just, It was a very weird series. LeBron, it didn't seem like they had a chance.
LeBron just eased through those two home games or two road games. And then they just came back and crushed. I mean, I think they crushed them in four of the six games. That was a weird, almost like a six-game sweep almost in some sense. It felt like that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And then the swept in the second round in 2017, and then obviously swept in the second round in 2018. So this team needed to do something. They needed to make a move. And then I don't understand why DeRozan was so upset. I guess he's just upset because of the communication, because there's not really much that he's upset about as far as, you know, the team made a move. And I don't know if he's upset about the team specifically making a move and thinking that somebody else would be better than him. But the idea of just the communication and telling him, I don't know, he got super upset about that, obviously.
Yeah, my guess is they, like I said, they tried to trade him in June. They basically probably told him they couldn't find a good trade partner. And we're like, all right, we're probably not going to trade you. Maybe they gave him even more guarantee, and I don't know for sure, but I bet there was some kind of guarantee. And then the Kawhi thing kind of opened up. I mean, I don't think in June, if you said the Raptors were going to trade for Kawhi, anybody would have taken you seriously. But then, after summer, it became a real thing. So, I mean, yeah. That's where it comes from, I think, is that he probably thought, oh, I'm safe. And then this door opened that really nobody saw coming. The same way that happened to PG last year was you didn't see the Oklahoma City door opening, and all of a sudden it did. And I mean, the Raptors, it makes sense. You know, they needed to shake this team up. The team is deep enough to make an NBA Finals run, but they just weren't the way they were constructed. But bringing a top five guy, if Kawhi is that top five guy, makes sense. So I get why he might be a little mad, but honestly, again, he kind of brought this on himself by, like you said, they have a terrible playoff record.
Yeah, and then there's the whole idea of, like, being loyal to a franchise and being loyal to the team and doing everything. And DeMar DeRozan kind of, he started his career with the franchise, and if I remember right, coming in, he was not this highly touted kind of player. It seemed like he was going to be a project player where he was kind of a dunker, and that was really it. And then he added all this stuff to his game. He grew so much in Toronto, became this 20 point per game scorer, became an all-star, became an all-NBA kind of guy. And then he grows with this city. He sticks his neck out for the city. I'm sure the whole time he's there, he's hearing about the Vince Carter situation where he didn't want to stay with the franchise and how Bargnani was this disappointment. And he's hearing all this stuff. And finally, he's like, I'm going to be the guy that stays. It's almost like a girlfriend that has this boyfriend or keeps having these boyfriends that have issues, but she's like, I can fix them. You know, like, I'm going to be the one to fix it. I'm going to be the one that brings us over the top. I'm going to be the one that's finally going to do this. And it just didn't happen for him. And the Raptors decided to make a move. And man, if Masai Ujiri, okay, so how about this? If Masai Ujiri had sent DeRozan like a text or had called him and been like, hey, the talks are back up again. We're going to trade, or we might trade you to San Antonio. But then it doesn't happen. Is this better, or does DeRozan all of a sudden become disgruntled? Like, could Masai Ujiri win in this situation?
No, it was a lose-lose situation for him in terms of how to deal with the star player who clearly wanted to be there. I have a question, though. Do you think Isaiah Thomas trade last year or this trade was worse in terms of loyalty?
Man, that's a good one. You think that – well, okay, the IT year – last year was probably better than any year DeRozan has had, right?
DeRozan's sustained success. I mean, he's had three going on four solid years now.
Yeah, that's a good point about sustained success. But the one year with IT was such a good – he was such an efficient, like, really good season. But he hadn't even been there that long. I think the loyalty thing is bigger with DeRozan because he had been there for so long. I mean, has he been there like 9 years, like 8 or 9 years? He's been there for so long.
Yeah, he's been there 9 years. I would tend to agree with you on that side that the DeRozan thing is more in terms of they owe him more loyalty because he committed to Toronto when he easily, I think, was it 3 years ago, was a free agent, and he could have easily bolted for LA if he wanted to. Yeah. So it makes sense, but it's kind of I think NBA players, and maybe he didn't realize, but they are starting to realize after the Isaiah Thomas trade that there is no loyalty in the NBA anymore. There's so much money is being thrown around, and there's so much opportunity for guys moving that it's a team will do its best to even trade an all-star for another all-star to marginally improve whatever it is. But there's at the end of the day, there's so much money in the league that it kind of gets rid of its loyalty just because you don't feel bad trading a guy on a $140 million contract because you know he's still going to get paid.
The IT thing was worse because of the money, because we look back now and IT takes the – you know, he takes the almost a minimum deal from Denver, and you look back at all the money he could have made had he just stayed in Boston. And then the whole situation with the playoff game with his sister dying in the car accident and coming back and playing. So like that, there's just so much more emotion and so much more was almost on the line for IT with Boston. Whereas with DeRozan, they had tried this over and over again. Like we talked about their playoff record. They had tried this, you know, over and over and over again in the playoffs, and it didn't work for them. And so now it's time to change it up. And kind of seems to everybody on the outside, like, yes, it's time to change it up. It's time to switch it up because we've tried this over and over again. It's just not working. We don't want to end up being, you know, this team that just keeps running back the same crew and it just doesn't work. And so it, from the outside looking in, it's not as egregious, you know, as far as loyalty because of the emotions and then the money that was attached to it, because DeRozan still, you know, he signed his big deal. He's going to get his money. So it's not going to be as bad as, you know, IT, who is now like completely missed out. And IT put himself on the line physically. Like he, you know, he had that hip injury. He tried to play through it. He put everything on the line for that team and then he lost and the team did not, you know, back him up in that.
Yeah.
So I think that, the emotional side, I think of it, of the IT thing is worse.
Yeah, that's the key component there, where he basically probably played with a fractured hip or whatever the injury was in that playoff in the Eastern Conference Finals years ago, which, and then the team kind of screwed up his rehab process and they didn't quite did his injury right, that they thought he might have not need surgery at first. Then he had surgery and there was that whole issue. But that's where it kind of the money part, where like with DeRozan, you just don't feel as bad because he's still going to get paid. Or IT, you still feel kind of awful because he basically went from like a $100 million player maybe to now like, what, you make it 2.5 this year?
Gosh. Yeah. And then, whatever he made for Cleveland last year.
Yeah. I mean, like 7 last year, I think. Maybe six, close to 6 or 7.
Gosh. Man, that dude, the Brinks truck did not, the Brinks truck can still show up with that kind of money, but it would have to be in like $1 bills, you know?
He's never able
to stack it up.
He's probably never getting a bigger than a 2-year contract, and he might be able to put together like maybe 3 or 4 at the mid level if he can come back to some kind of level, but he's never getting $100 million, and that's what he thought he was going to get. He's never touching that.
Gosh, he'd have to make some really good investments to make that kind of money, I think, at this point.
Yeah, maybe he'll where's he in Denver? So I guess there's not like, he's not near Silicon Valley where all the guys are supposed to be making a ton of money by investing in KD and stuff.
Adam, there's so much weed money out there, though.
Oh, true. He could be invested in that. You're right. I don't know how we can talk about that on the Locked On NBA channel, but that is true.
Hey, I didn't say we were investing in it, but
no, they're right there. He could probably put some money in some of that, and hopefully, if it gets legalized nationally, he can make back that $100 million he thinks he's worth.
He can expand. He can expand his own strain of IT. We'll call it that. All right. When we come back, Adam and I will tell you which teams we think improved the most this summer. All right, Adam, let's just go back and forth. We'll just each give a team. If you have the same team, then we'll let each other know. So hopefully it ends up being 10 teams because we didn't talk about this beforehand. But I think some of them will be the same. The first one I'm going to start with is my Dallas Mavericks. I have the most knowledge of this situation, but I think they improved a lot. I'm not saying that this is in any order, you know, teams wise, or they improved the most more than any other team, but the Mavericks improved significantly. They add DeAndre Jordan. Last year, Adam, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you know who started the most games at center for the Mavericks last year? It's a tough question. It is a really hard question.
It was it one of their European players?
He is European. Tell you. One of the greatest European players.
Was it ever. Dirk? Dirk really started the most in the center?
Dirk started 77 games last year at the five.
I thought they had another European player they played at center too.
Maxi Kleber played some minutes, but most of the time it was at four.
Okay.
But so they're replacing Dirk's minutes at five with DeAndre. So you're instantly improving rebounding. Obviously, you're instantly improving your backline defense. You're improving even your defense in space. Dirk will, the talk right now in Dallas is whether Dirk will, you know, continue to start at the four next to DeAndre for the first, you know, 3 minutes or so and then come out, or if he'll come off the bench. So that's what people are trying to work out right now. But the Mavericks have not had a good center since Tyson Chandler left in 2011. I can't say left, since the Mavericks sent him off and didn't bring him back. But since 2011, no center has started more than 75 games for the Mavericks since 2011. These are the centers that started the most games each year for the Mavericks. You ready for this list? I don't think you're ready.
I'm ready for it. Let's hear it.
2016, Zaza Pachulia, 69 games.
Ooh.
2015, old version of Tyson Chandler, 75 games. 2014, Samuel Dalembert, no longer in the league, 68 games. 2013, the caveman, Chris Kamen, 52 games. In 2012, Brennan Haywood, 54 games. Others receiving votes slash also starting games for the Mavericks at center. Andrew Bogut, Salah Mejri, Nerlens Noel, Bernard James, Jan Mahimny, JaVale McGee, and Greg Smith. Those have been the players that have played center for the Mavericks since they won the title.
Jan Mahimny, Pacer guy. The guys, after you guys traded him, he actually turned out to be a decent player before he went to Washington for a year.
And then in Washington, now he's just unplayable, apparently.
Yeah, but he had a good year. But I'm not surprised by that because basically since the 2011 finals, the Mavs have sort of been in the, I don't want to say like, they've been in the cycle of mediocrity to bad almost, right? They basically borderline playoff team to be terrible.
And then the last 2 years have just been atrocious. Like, and then also adding Luka Doncic is huge for the Mavericks. This is going to be a huge, he's a rookie that comes in and is already ready to play. They're basically replacing the production they got from the combination of Seth Curry 2 years ago, Doug McDermott last year, and Devin Harris from the last 2 years, which Devin Harris might even come back. That was a report from Shams. I just got on my phone like 20 minutes ago. But Luka Doncic is basically replacing those guys. I think they're going to be a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, there's a way you could talk yourself into DeAndre, Nowitzki, Barnes, Smith, and then I guess they're probably going to play Doncic at out point guard or shooting guard next to Smith. Talk yourself into that lineup being, I don't know, decent, right? I mean, it's just the problem is they're in the West, so that's not going to do many favors. But you look at a list of teams that were, like, they hit their record last year and how much they might win next year, the Mavs are certainly going to improve because they won so little games last year and they're at least, it seems like, a better team overall.
Yeah, and another thing that to watch out for the Mavericks is they had the worst record by far, one of the worst records in the past 10 years in clutch game situations, games that are, you know, within 5 points in under 5 minutes to play. I think they lost 38 games like that.
Wow.
Which is just an insane amount. So if a bunch of those games, you know, bounce the other way, if half those games bounce the other way, they're like a 39 win.
Yeah, team. Their expected win loss was 33 and they won 24. So that's a huge, I mean, that's got to be one of the biggest swings. I think the Hornets had like a 6 or 7 game swing as well that way too. So,
yeah.
You know, assuming they can pull off in the clutch, you're right. The question is, who did they get that can really, it's like that clutch time guy. Like DeAndre Jordan is not your go-to guy at the end of a game. I mean, you're talking about Dirk being the guy, but at his age, who knows? Maybe Smith becomes it sort of. Like, I don't know. They don't really have that go-to guy at the end of games yet.
It's going to be Luka Doncic, whether that works out for the Mavs or not. That's the guy who it's going to be, I think. I think as soon as Rick Carlisle saw Luka Doncic and watched his tape, he was like, sign me up for that guy. That guy is, I can finally play my 3-guard lineups, but a guard that can actually guard wings in Luka Doncic. You know, a guy that is playable in those kind of lineups. He is chomping at the bit to play with this guy.
Yeah, but he's super young. I mean, I don't know if a guy that young can be your clutch time go-to guy yet. I mean, maybe in 2 seasons.
I know.
Not right now.
I'm not expecting them to make the playoffs or anything. I'm just saying they're going to be a lot better. And I think that, you know, Doncic is going to be that guy, whether it works out for the Mavs or not. It's a long play. It's a long play for the Mavs.
Yeah. I do want to say though, I prepared for you to pick them as one of your most improved teams.
Okay.
Like, so I made a list. I kind of did an order of like teams that improve the most, most wins, basically like make the biggest jumps. And the Mavs are on my list as an idea, but then I took them off. I'm like, their jump's going to be from 24 to 35, which isn't really mean anything, in my opinion, at the end of the day. Sorry, I don't mean to be mean.
It means something to me. I have to cover them.
No, true. That it means assets, but like as a team, it doesn't, you know, I've been a Pacer fan, I mean, all my life, and there were times they won 35, they won 35 games, I think, every year. Since 1989, Reggie was drafted, they won 35 more games, but winning 35 games doesn't really mean anything, especially in the West when it's going to take, what, 45 at the minimum to make the 8 seed. Like, they're going to be so far out of the playoff race at the end of the day.
You're right. All right, give me a team that actually improved then.
So I did mine in order. So I'll give my number five. And I honestly, my same team, the team that I cover, the Pacers. So in terms of teams that can make the most improvements of wins, they're probably somewhere between probably 2 to 4 wins better next year, which considering where they were at 48 wins, it's a kind of a huge improvement getting over that 50 win mark. And, you know, they, like they said, they added your boy McDermott. They added Tyreke Evans. They dumped Lance, who was one of their worst bench players. They are now 9 deep, depending on where the rookies play. So, and, you know, you're expecting an improvement from Miles Turner and Sabonis and maybe even Oladipo to some extent. So they're going to be competitive, probably top four in the East. And they got maybe not like a huge significantly better, but on the margins, they're a lot better than they were last year.
Yeah, I liked some of those moves. I like the moves they made. Their bench is gonna be bolstered. You also have some internal, you know, guys that are gonna get better too. I mean, Miles Turner is gonna be a year older. Sabonis is gonna be a year older. Oladipo, all three of those guys could take leaps. I mean, Oladipo is an All NBA guy, so him taking a leap, I don't know, like how much better can he really get? But another year with a team, I like that move. The Doug McDermott move was very interesting to me. That's a lot of money, and I was glad the Mavericks didn't pay him all that money.
Yeah. So honest opinion. What do you think of Doug McDermott? You've said it on the Locked On Pacers podcast, but I'm wondering if you could say it out here on Locked On NBA.
It's not like a secret.
No. So. Honest opinion. What is it?
Doug almost shot 50% from three with the Mavericks. Like the guy can knock down some shots. So if you want that coming off your bench, and a lot of teams need that off their bench, you're going to get a great guy in that. He's also a little bigger, so he can guard some bigger guys, which is normally, like, three-point shooters off the bench can't do that. He's also a really good cutter, so he's just really good off the ball in general. He's not really going to create anything off the dribble. He's not really going to, you know, set up shots for anybody else. But he's a guy that if you have somebody like, you know, Corey Joseph or even Aaron Holiday coming in that can set up some shots, he's going to make it a lot easier on guys like that, so that they can just come in, pass him the ball in a good spot. He'll hit a corner three. He'll hit a top of the key three. He's a really good finisher of plays in that way. But anything else, you're not really getting a ton. But then you add Tyreke Evans, who does everything else that Doug McDermott doesn't do, I think.
To be honest, the biggest thing I had, it was just that Lance left the team for Tyreke Evans. I mean, I understand Lance is the heart of Indianapolis at times, but he was so bad at times last year. I mean, I remember at least, well, let's see, the first Mavs game, he dribbled off his foot at the end of the game to lose the game, basically. Game, he couldn't guard McDermott. He was getting lost in him throughout the entire game. McDermott's hitting three after three. So, and those were two wins. If they won those two games, they would have had home court in the first round of the playoffs, which would have been a huge difference. So I'm excited to go from a guy who was pretty much a negative to a guy who, in Evans, who was a pretty positive player on the court most of the time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And with Doug McDermott, you at least have a guy that has an elite NBA skill that you know you're going to get night after night. Like, you can go to him for that specific thing. Like, that's in the NBA, like in these dog days where you're like, oh, we just need something. That's a guy you can go to and like, all right, we know we're getting this from you, you know?
Exactly.
And that's good for a team too.
Exactly. God.
Especially a team with a lot of young guys. All right. Another guy for me, another team for me that improved a lot. I mean, I guess let's just get it out of the way. The Los Angeles Lakers, they add LeBron James. They get a ton better in that regard. I mean, you're replacing like Isaiah Thomas. You're replacing, you know, Luol Deng, whatever Luol Deng was bringing. You're just replacing these, you know, guys that didn't really give him a ton. You're replacing Julius Randle, I guess, with LeBron James. I mean, yeah, you can't really improve much better than that. And then their other signings, like we mentioned, Lance was really bad, and he's obviously their wild card. No clue what he's going to bring to that team. I don't know if he ends up being a negative for them, though, because I don't know actually how much Lance is going to play. I mean, he's on the depth chart now. Josh Hart had a really awesome summer league. He could be, you know, ahead of the depth chart. You have KCP, who's probably going to start for them. And then you have your wings. You have, you know, Beasley they just signed. You have Brandon Ingram. Like, I just don't know how much he's going to play.
Yeah, I think they brought in Lance to push around Steph Curry and Chris Paul when they played those teams, basically. And that's right. I mean, why else would you?
Hey, Lance, you got six fouls, man.
Exactly. The Lakers were also number one on my list. I mean, they won 35 games last year, and they're probably going to get close to 50 because LeBron is, I think, a guaranteed 50 games for any team he's on because he's that good.
Seriously.
I mean, I know he didn't win 50 with the Cavs, but I mean, if he needs to win 50, he went 50 to make the playoffs. So that's why they're the number one.
Yeah,
but
right. That's a good point. He didn't need to win 50 games with the Cavs. The other thing about the Lakers is people make fun of the Rondo signing, but their backup situation last year was awful, like so bad. They had Isaiah Thomas for a lot of those minutes. But then before that, and even with Isaiah Thomas, sometimes when Lonzo Ball was out, their backup was Tyler Ennis. And if you are on Lakers Twitter at all, their most hated person probably just in the world right now is Tyler Ennis. They just really hated any time he was brought into the game. That's a huge improvement, I think.
Yeah, and you just think if you put LeBron at kind of, well, between LeBron and Rondo at sort of the point guard spot, because LeBron honestly plays point guard most of the time, he'll be able to sort of facilitate to the rookies, and or not, I guess the younger players now, Lonzo and Kuzma and Ingram, and maybe sort of get more out of them like he did in Cleveland with Kyrie, kind of taking care of the next level. So you think that's where they'll probably improve too? I just think putting LeBron out there at any time just makes them better. They're, like you said, they're sneakily deep. Like, they have Josh Hart off the bench, and they got Beasley now, and they're a little.
Kuzma's probably coming off the bench.
Kuzma's probably coming off the bench too. So they're a little deeper than they were last year. But I honestly, just putting the ball in LeBron's hands is going to make this team just significantly better, because they're going to have like this calming presence of a guy who is really good at distributing the ball when he needs to, and really when he needs to, takes everybody else up a level. I mean, he made J.R. Smith like actually a coveted player for a little bit there in Cleveland.
And Tristan Thompson got him a max deal.
Exactly. And neither of those guys now are probably going to even be close to on a playoff rotation of any team.
Gosh, yeah, that's wild. And Iman Shumpert too.
Yeah, he got a lot of guys paid, so that's a good thing. And LA has the money to do that, so get some more guys maybe.
All right, give me one more team and then we'll take a break.
All right, I'll save my big one, my surprising one for after the break.
Ooh, so save the hot one.
So Milwaukee, right? I don't think they made actually any. I mean, they signed Ilyasova and whatever, but I think
they got Brook Lopez.
But I think the Budenholzer thing is huge for them. I mean, it takes them from the worst NBA coach to top 10, top 5 coach at times. Budenholzer was really good in Atlanta. I mean, you got the Giannis growth. I mean, they're going to be a lot better than we're last year, because they're going to be better coach. Giannis is going to be better. They're going to figure things out a little more. Jabari, I don't think really fit with that team that well and might have been kind of a cancer in the locker room. He leaves. That might actually improve them. So I think they'll be better, and I think they'll honestly be close to 50 wins, maybe a little less than that. They won, I think, 44 last year, but I think they're one of the better teams next year, and they didn't really do any big signings besides the coach.
Yeah, and they only got 48 games from Malcolm Brogdon last year too. So bringing him back, another year with Bledsoe, that's a huge thing to watch out for, is what Eric Bledsoe is going to bring to this team. He was awful in the playoffs last year. Just really, really bad. But he could have a bounce back year. He's a guy that just had some good moments in the NBA for sure. When he used to play, I mean, he used to play two guard next to Chris Paul and the Clippers. Chris Middleton, if he doesn't get traded, is a solid guy. And then obviously, like you said, the growth from Giannis. And when is the Thon Maker growth going to come out? When is the Thon Maker like breakout year going to happen? But
isn't Thon like 35 years old?
There's going to be a Thon Maker breakout year, I feel like, when he hits his prime, or maybe when he's over.
Yeah, I would say he might be in his prime age right now. We just don't know it yet. No, he's not that old. He just might be a couple older than we think.
All right. That being said, when we come back, Adam and I will give you the rest of the teams we think improved the most. All three of mine are definitely going to be locks to be in the playoffs, and I think they improved more than any other team.
Okay.
We'll tell you that coming up next. All right, Adam, my next team that improved the most this summer, the Toronto Raptors. I mean, you get Kawhi over DeMar DeRozan, and that defensive jump, I think, is so big. To go from a guy that is definitely a negative on defense in DeMar DeRozan to go to the defensive player of the year, that is such a huge improvement. Not even saying bringing in Danny Green, too. Like, I think that is going to be huge for them as well to start it, too. Just an awesome improvement from
them. Yeah, so my thing with them, though, is how much better in terms of wins can they get? I mean, they won 59 games last year. Maybe they'll win 60? That's hard to do for any NBA team to reach 60 wins. Like, that's like kind of an elite class of 60-win teams out there. But I agree with you. They definitely improved. I just don't know. You know, in my terms, I was doing it really based on wins. I don't know if they improved that much in wins, but they definitely improved in the fact that there will be a bigger threat in the playoffs. I mean, we talked about that earlier. They're going to be a threat to win the East this year for sure.
Oh, yeah. And then you look at some of their younger guys, too. They're guys off the bench, their internal development. You have OG Anunoby, who was starting a lot of their games last year. You have Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet. Both of those guys are going to be 24 coming up this year. They're still, really young and got a lot of room to grow in front of them. Siakam, for sure. Can you imagine in practice going up against like VanVleet, Siakam, and OG Anunoby and Kawhi? Like, you have to score against that group.
Well, especially if OG takes that little step, which I think he might, and all of a sudden they've got really two wing defenders who can switch simultaneously, which is really lethal. And if he can become kind of a decent scorer, like I said, he makes a little step, he's kind of a perfect number two for Kawhi, because if Kawhi is back to his level before he got hurt, you think he can score 25 a game, which means you want to give him some break on the defensive end. a little bit of a lesser load. You mean, obviously you lock him in when you need to, but you kind of let him take some time off so he can take carry a load there. So theoretically, if OG is that kind of elite level defender, you've got a guy you can just put in to guard the best other guys, the other player, best player, basically.
Yeah, seriously. And a lot of, I mean, for the Raptors and for a lot of these teams, it's all predicated on chemistry. You know, if this team doesn't, you know, on paper, this team improved a ton, but basketball is more than just paper and looking at numbers and looking at, you know, who's on the team. There's a lot more to that. If Kawhi doesn't want to be there and it shows early, then it could be an Eric Bledsoe and Phoenix situation where you're just like, this guy may not even play. They may, you know, who knows what that situation could be like. It could be a toxic situation.
Coaching too.
Who knows? But yeah, coaching too, adding that new coach in Nurse. So that situation is definitely one to watch out for. Give me another team.
All right, so this relates to the Raptors. I have the other side. I think the Spurs will actually get better.
Ooh.
So, like I said, I base mine completely on wins. So, right, the Spurs won 47 games without a top five, top three player. They just added an all-NBA player. Shouldn't they probably win a little more games? Because they have – I mean, they win 50 games every year. It feels like I think they'll get back to that just because of coaching – whatever it is about the Spurs way, they win 50 games every year. So I'm not saying they're going to make a deeper playoff run per se, but I think they could get to 50 wins, which is an improvement somewhat, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you're essentially replacing Kyle Anderson because Kawhi didn't really play last year. Like he played, I think, what did he play, 17 games or something like that?
Low like that.
Last year, maybe less than that. But they're basically replacing Kyle Anderson with DeMar DeRozan, which, you know, that's a pretty big improvement. With Kyle Anderson, especially in the speed department.
Plus, I think I think DeRozan and Aldridge will fit well together too. They'll play off each other, I think, pretty well.
All the mid-range jumpers. Give me all the mid-range jumpers, which is probably like it's probably lacking right now in the market. Like, you know, the Moneyball thing where they looked at on base percentage and they were like, oh man, this is, you know, an undervalued skill in the NBA or in baseball. So maybe the mid-range jumpers are the ones now.
Yeah,
maybe that they secret.
I think is it Chris Hayes? He's the 538 NBA writer. He wrote about that with the Pacers actually.
Chris Herring,
that's what it is. Chris Haynes is the ESPN guy. He wrote an article towards the end of last year, but the Pacers basically doing that where they were taking advantage of that. They were a really good mid-range team. They were taking a lot of mid-range shots and hitting them at above 50%, which is about equal to the 3-point range, and kind of exploiting that where like you could be the Rockets and just shoot a ton of threes and hope you hit a bunch, but if you have a really effective mid-range team that can really get into the mid-50s at times, that is just as good. And teams don't guard as well because they think they kind of lay off because they think you're going to take the 3-point shot, or they jump out to shooters first because that's the way they're trained now defensively. So there is a chance they could sort of exploit that. And I bet the Spurs have looked at that because they look at everything and they're one of the smartest organizations in basketball.
Yeah. And I think Jakob Poeltl is going to be interesting for them. I think obviously they've, you know, feels like every single year they have some of these, you know, European bigs or, you know, these foreign bigs that they bring in and develop and become something. And Poeltl was one of the most talented guys for the Raptors coming off the bench last year. And he's still, what is he, 22? Going to be 23, I think.
Yeah, he's 23. Really nice. I mean, if you look at the trade, though, it's really similar to the Paul George trade and that Oladipo and Sabonis. You know, if you knew Oladipo was going to be what he became, you're basically, it's a really similar trade in that Sabonis is kind of a throw-in guy. He played him wrong, and Poeltl's been kind of the 10th guy on this team, so he hasn't got kind of a shine. And you wonder if, you know, he gets put into a system that he kind of fits around him a little better. They can kind of show some of his strengths the way they paid up with Sabonis, where they put him in at center and let him kind of not worry about 3-point shots. And I wonder if Poeltl has some of that in him too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Another team for me that improved is the Boston Celtics, just by way of they're going to get a whole season of Gordon Hayward probably, with or without his New Balance shoes. They're getting Gordon Hayward back. And also the internal improvements from Tatum, Brown, Terry Rozier, obviously. That team's going to be so deep. They I think, could improve a lot. Unless the Raptors thing works out 100% where their chemistry is just, you know, right out the gates, they're just destroying it. I think that the Celtics will be number one in the East, no question.
Yeah, this was the last team on my list, so hopefully you have another team. We'll see if you do. But, no, you're exactly right. When Hayward comes back, they go from a 55-win team to a 65-win team, and maybe – I mean, if Tatum really makes the jump and you got Kyrie completely healthy, you've got three legitimate stars, then you got Horford, who is, you know, an all-star and a really solid kind of piece and everything. You've got a team that could be close, maybe not historically great, but be a really good regular season team. They're deep too because they brought Smart back. I mean, they're just going to be really good. They got a coach. Everything about them says they're going to win 60 plus games.
Yeah, 60 games from Kyrie Irving last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you get maybe 12 more, or, you know, man, 22 games he missed out of last year. That's a lot of opportunities to win. They still won 55 games. So that's a huge team. And then, yeah, my last team, and I think both of our last team, is the Golden State Warriors. Somehow I think they improved. Maybe not right away because the returns on their investment in DeMarcus Cousins are not going to show up right away. He's probably not going to play until January, maybe, you know, as early as December. But when he comes back, they have just so many different looks that they can throw. They have all these versatile players, you know, Durant, who can play multiple positions, Draymond, obviously, Clay. You know, they have all these guys that can play so many, Iguodala, they can play so many different positions. Then you have DeMarcus Cousins to throw in there. If you have a game or a series that's, you know, really slow and you need somebody to just get you a bucket every single half court possession, DeMarcus Cousins is one of the best in the NBA at doing that. And then a sneaky good move they did was adding Jonas Jerebko. They keep adding some of these guys every year, like a wing that, you know, should be a good 3-point shooter for them. Last year it was Caspi, and that didn't work out at all. But last 5 years, Jonas Jerebko shot 39% from three on 609 attempts. So I think that's going to go up for them. I think that he's a sneaky good add. He was pretty good for Utah
last year. My only word for them regular season wise is that they basically proved they don't need home court to win the NBA Finals. Like they went to Houston and just destroyed them in Game 7. Like, it didn't even, I mean, I know Chris Paul isn't there or whatever, but I mean, they without a sweat, basically, it seemed like. So I wonder if they even like try to sniff 60 wins. I wonder if Curry sits out somewhere between 20 games, because if Curry gets hurt, that kind of almost doesn't quite ruin their Finals chances, but it puts a huge dent in them. So I wonder if they just kind of ease in the regular season again, maybe even go for like 55 wins and a 3 seed, because honestly, I don't think they care. They can beat anybody on any court at any time. So that's, and I didn't put my list only because of that reason, because honestly, you're right. I mean, they added a guy basically replaced Nick Young, who was pretty bad for them, and then they added Boogie, who at his best is an all-star.
Oh, only yeah. That. Well, he also was all NBA.
Was he
too,
second or third team that year, 2 years ago? Was he second team, right? Or 1 year? I'm trying to remember what he was when he made it. He would have made probably third team this year if he stayed healthy.
He 2-time all NBA. Okay. Hold on, I'm getting word in my ear that he was all NBA second team in 2015 and 16. Second team both times.
Yeah, and really what he does is he helps their bench. I mean, they can just make him the center point of their bench offense at times. Instead of the KD ISOs, you get KD plus Boogie now, which is a little less boring to watch, I guess. I thought some of the KD ISOs were kind of like, oh, this is just KD dribbling up and down and up and down. Oh, he's going to shoot. Oh, he made it. Cool.
Gosh, they're going to play that lineup, and everyone's just – Twitter, NBA Twitter is going to be hilarious when they play that lineup of – Cousins, KD, Draymond, Clay, and Steph. They're just, I mean, they might not be that good together because there's a lot of kinks to figure out with that lineup, but NBA Twitter.
Yeah. I honestly just can't wait if Boogie has I'm concerned, like you just said, Boogie, could he really get back to his level with his Achilles tear? But if Boogie gets even close, like let's say 75% of what he was at his peak, I mean, that team, it's going to be like, there's just nonstop complaining out there. It's just going to be complain. The Warriors raid the league. And it's like this guy shouldn't be able to do this. This is almost 7-foot dude who tore the Achilles and nobody's made it back from it like that well. And so if he is able to do it, it's almost like they should be applauding him, not kind of complaining.
Yeah. And one point that I don't know if anybody else has said, at least not on this podcast, but the thing about him being a 7-foot guy that hasn't come back from, you know, nobody's really come back from injury like that. This is the team that took Steph Curry, and he had all these bad ankle problems, and they were able to fix that. So I wonder if they'll have some kind of weird thing with him to be able to fix this Achilles. I remember reading a story about Steph Curry and the that's the first time I've done that where I switched it the other way, Seth and Steph. But with Steph Curry, they had him work on his hips, and like doing all these hip exercises and strengthening his hips really helped his ankles, because of just the balance and all that kind of stuff. And so I wonder if they have some kind of technique that they'll use with an Achilles injury.
Yeah, and honestly, after Adrian Peterson came back 7 months in that ACL tear, whatever that was, like 6 or 7 years ago, and just torched the NFL, I think anybody can bet from anything at this point. I mean, like,
seriously, just get a bionic Achilles. I mean, we can't make one out of robot parts. Come on, scientists. Come on,
science has gotten so good. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he came back at 90% of himself. I mean, maybe not 100% just because it's hard in general to come back any injury 100%, but if he's 90% of himself, that's still freaking awesome.
Freaking awesome indeed, Adam. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us on Locked On Mavs. Again, you can find me, Nick Van Exit. I write for Mavs Moneyball and do the Locked On Mavs. If you're interested in Luka Doncic, if you're interested, Dennis Smith Jr., and sometimes we just do general NBA stuff, you can find me and Isaac there over on Locked On Mavs. Adam, where can they
find you?
You
can find me at IndyCornrows.com, another SB Nation site. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreedmanAdam5. And if you really want to, you can throw a follow to my co-host, Tony's at Teased NBA, but you don't really have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, don't follow my co-host at Isaac L. Harris. Don't follow him at all. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to Locked On NBA, and somebody else will be back tomorrow.